Hello, welcome to step 3 of my Love Addiction Recovery Program. In this part of the program, I'm going to be talking to you today about the signs of love or romantic addiction. So this is where we begin. Some of the signs of love addiction are, so very slowly, I'm going to go through these with you today. Constantly searching for love and romance, quickly becoming fixated on one person, unbeknown to them. That's probably the main thing of love addiction. What I've experienced here, it's as if you are constantly searching for someone that you can transfer this all abundance of love that you feel that you have inside of you. It's as if you are searching for someone or have found someone and you want to pour it all into this person and then become very, very fixated on that person, the one that you've either met online or met in the workplace or met anywhere, or that you are in a relationship with. It's as if there's an inability to have any separateness from this person. Another thing is another real sign of love addiction, and I see this quite a lot in my practice, is when couples are constantly texting one another, emailing one another, or waiting for that person to contact or call. And whilst I'm speaking about that, and it is part of this recovery program, you will see that I've written a small ebook or a PDF on Anastasia's story. And you will clearly see in this part, the writing part of my recovery program, just what it's like and what happened to Anastasia when she was so compelled to waiting for Ben to call, but he doesn't call, and she goes through another day and he doesn't call. Now, if she'd have had his phone number and wasn't suffering from the acute embarrassment of unreciprocated love or love addiction, she'd have probably pursued him, but she didn't have his number. But this thing about profuse texting, emailing, waiting for the other one to call, phoning that person. When people are in the height of this, I could honestly say, and I've seen it with individuals and couples that are in a love-addicted relationship, that they could text one another, so it can, love addiction can be a very mutual, it can go in two ways, but more often than not, there's one. But I'd say 100, 150 calls, if you believe that would be possible a day, at least 50 text messages or put downs or all of this sort of thing. So this part of falling into the trap of love addiction can actually be very, very scary for the one on the receiving end of it, because it's as if they feel completely taken over by this person, completely cornered, or there's no space or no privacy or no sense of just being able to feel that they have space around them to move where they want to move, because the phone, particularly in this age of mobile phones and modern technology and smartphones, it's much, much more rife. So that's a very, very real thing as far as love addiction's concerned. The other one, as I've said here, is falling in love with people online. And the reason I mention that is that with some of my clients that I've seen, they could become completely obsessed and completely love addicted with somebody that they've never really even met before. They may have been chatting to them in an online chat room, or they may have just seen their profile on Facebook, but that is enough just to bring them into this obsession with this one person. When people are in this, they would speak about the person, even though it's only online, as if they are actually in a relationship with them. Even if they come and see me to do one of my recovery programs, they'll speak about that person. They may not have even met this person, as if they are real, as if they, because inside themselves, remember what we were talking about before, about blind love, inside of themselves, they actually feel that that person is alive in them. And that's quite a critical point, I think, when love addiction is so acutely intense with somebody on chat room or something. Now, the other one is, as I've already mentioned, is having a crush on a celebrity or someone famous, believing one day that you might be with this person. Now, I suppose when I think about that, there's a fine line between, again, just having an infatuation or a crush or looking at a kind of a good-looking actor or actress and thinking, gosh, you know, and becoming slightly infatuated by them. But this is something different. Remember, as I said at the beginning, there's a real difference between having a normal, natural, healthy crush or infatuation, but when it gets into these realms of love addiction or obsession or loving too much, then it becomes more of a problem for the sufferer, because eventually or ultimately they will have to face the love withdrawal stage. The other real prevalent thing, as I've got here, is mistaking a sexual experience or a romantic infatuation for love. And much of what I do in my practice, and I one day, I don't know when, will be doing another recovery program on the six stages of love and the way we love, how I actually work with this particular one that you see here, is that trying to understand what loving really is. Loving in the right way, loving lovingly, wanting to enhance that person's sense of life and creativity and enhance their personal growth. I'm no one to say what love is, but I suppose I am saying that people that suffer from love addiction can get sexual intensity, lust, desire, and romantic infatuation mixed up with love. But that would be another recovery program. But again, I will be speaking about that a lot more as I go on. Now, one of the other things that one can go through when they're experiencing love addiction is to feel enslaved to emotional dependency and romantic intrigue. Now, let me describe that a little bit. It's almost as if you've met this person and you, once again, you become encapsulated in this sense of, as if this person's an enigma. You're intrigued by them. They're a mystery to you. And I've even heard some couples or some individuals say, it was as if when I met her or him, I would say, you know, who are you? How do I know you? This is when it's a mutual attraction, because it's as if looking into the eyes of someone you really feel drawn to immediately kind of floods you with this sense of longing and yearning and wanting, and you momentarily feel absolutely high. And so that is another sign of love addiction. When normal people, when they have an attraction, they date, they go on dinner dates, and they get to know each other, or go for a picnic in the park, or a nice long walk, or go to a museum or an art gallery, and it kind of evolves in that kind of very natural or organic and warm pace. The biggest thing is feeling a deep connection with that person. But the person that shows signs of love addiction jumps over that part and goes straight into enslavement, as if you immediately feel powerless, taken over. And on one level, understandably so, you actually are taken over, because it is as if this person suddenly is like the god that you put on pedestal, the one is going to complete you. So it's little wonder why some people may experience that sense of love addiction and enslavement and romantic intrigue when they first fall in love, or when they're caught in that hook of love addiction. Now, another sign that you might be suffering from love addiction would be that, as I've said here, that love addicts obsess about someone they cannot let go of, even, and this is the point, even if that person is not good for them, even if that person is unavailable, even if that person is quite toxic or inflammable for them, in other words, bringing out a very clingy, obsessive and frightening aspect of you. So that is another sign of love addiction. Now, one of the things that I haven't yet mentioned, as you can see here, is withdrawal, love withdrawal and rejection. When people show signs of love addiction, it is literally like the withdrawal stroke rejection aspect of it, and it has been proven, is as intense as coming down or off heroin or cocaine. And that is absolutely proven. And I suppose one of the things that made me curious about this is I thought, yes, that's why love addiction is on some level harder to kick than actually a drug, because it, I know that, well, as I've heard, that heroin and cocaine makes you high and feel good, but then there's that come down, and that's a different kind of withdrawal. But with love addiction, it can make you feel so complete, rather like a drug would, that on one level, it's very hard to argue with. It's very hard to get through to that person, which is why I never try, that this is not good for you. I do not go there with my clients that suffer from this kind of withdrawal. And I want to say here, the problem with this, and this is a very, very real problem, is that if someone, I don't actually see someone when they're in the withdrawal, because when people are there, it is literally like coming down from cocaine. They can't assimilate, they can't hear, they can't function, they're traumatized. And it's not as if they are in the trauma, they are the trauma. That personal injury, that injury to their heart, to your heart, if you've ever experienced it, you will know that it feels like a knife is going through you when that person leaves and you're left desolate. And the withdrawal is perhaps the hardest stage to get through. And so I'm not saying I don't see people in it, but I work with the withdrawal, and then people come to see me, because if they are doing one of my programs and just absolutely can't function, I know I'm not reaching them. I know my words can't reach them, and I know that they're not really present. And so those sessions are more about therapeutically holding, containing the session, getting to know who the person of addiction is, because it really is one of the most intense parts of love addiction, which is the love withdrawal. As it says here, that the rejection is experienced as an extreme intensity, a primal panic, an abandonment at the pit of your belly, as if somebody's just left you out at sea, and you can see the waves coming up and a turbulent thunderstorm, and yet you haven't even got any way to get out of it. You are out there drowning. And so the primal panic and abandonment is part of it. But what I want to reassure you here is that the exercises and some of the practical visualizations and relaxations that I'm going to be giving you are going to be really about how you can help center on just the moment, nothing else, nothing else. How you can just be, how you can regenerate that sense of appreciation of yourself, begin to transform that, you know, that needy or longing and yearning part of yourself, and find and preoccupy yourself with something that you have made for yourself, that you have developed. So a lot of this program is to do with self-validation, self-development, and self-actualization, so that you can actually begin to feel empowered in your own life. I hope some of this is making sense. And I just want to say here, please don't give up, because I know my recovery programs do really work and make a tangible difference. Now, one of the other things about the signs of love addiction is choosing unavailable people, which will trigger your abandonment. You see, somewhere, this didn't happen just miraculously. I'll come to this more towards the end of this understanding love addiction, because it doesn't just come out of nowhere. Somewhere, maybe being bullied at school or not having enough nurturing, mirroring, or healthy attachment, somewhere this trigger was already there, already inside you, waiting for someone just to come along and just trigger that place in you and throw you into this primal abandonment. And primal abandonment, while I'm speaking about it, is absolutely one of the most fearful things that one can ever go through. Because when you're there, you do feel so alone. You do feel so desolate. There is no sense of you-ness anymore. But I hope there will be by the end of what I'm doing here in this program. Just a few other signs of the love addiction is when love addiction and emotional pain, again, is confused with romantic love. So when you feel this intense pain and this intense sense of longing and yearning to be completed, that is mistaken for nimokito pa, I love you, don't leave me, don't ever leave me, because I love you. And I'm going to be showing a clip, a little wee bit through this recovery program, and you can actually hear a recording of that, a recording of this desperation that I'm trying to convey, that you will be feeling in this love addiction place, this desolate place that you're in. But once again, I'm going to keep coming back and to try and hold on to something, even if it's just my voice, even if it's just the words on this screen, to know that this place is a temporary place. You will survive it and you will come through it. One other thing about the signs of love addiction would be feeling overly familiar with this person, as if you've known them for a long, long time. A likeness, most like yourself, that soulmate feeling, that feeling of I have come home to myself. You know me and I know you. There's nothing. You hear people saying this sometimes when they come and see me in a session if they're stuck in this. I know him or her more than they know themselves. Such a thing, such a sacred thing to take for granted on one level. But it feels like that. What comes to mind here is that in the film Wuthering Heights, Catherine and Heathcliff, Catherine is describing what she feels, what this love is about for Heathcliff, to the housemaid in the house. I think they were in a kitchen scene or something like that. And she said, and that the housemaid said, "What is it about Heathcliff?" I might get this wrong, so don't quote me on this, but I'm just trying to encapsulate the sense of the love-addict quality. And the housemaid turns around and says, "But what is it about Heathcliff?" And Catherine said, "Why, Heathcliff? He is me and I'm him. There's no difference. We are one." Now, I'm saying this now, and after all these years of, because I've done a lot of work in studying art house films and studying films and narratives, I'm still getting goosebumps, because that's exactly what love addiction is. It is as if Catherine's saying they're the same person. So in other words, how can I force myself away from Heathcliff? How is that possible? There's no way I can do that, because Heathcliff's me and I am him and we are one. So I think that really describes love addiction so terribly clearly on that level. Once again, I think I've said this before, that you confuse sex with love, and often, and this is a huge thing, feel that you, it's hard to put, that you give sex and think that that is going to be the thing that's going to get your love reciprocated. Or because he or she made passionate love to me, they seemed really present and connected, surely they're going to feel as intensely for me as I do them. Surely they will never leave me. Surely if we have the most incredibly romantic and intense sex or lust or passion, you know, this will be my hallmark forever and we will be one forever. But that's the problem. Not only that men and women are very different in that way, I say that because a lot of very, very young girls, when they reach adolescence, have crushes on boys, and often it's the boys that want to have the sex, but the girls are already in this romantic desire for completeness and romantic love or a crush, and it's so misunderstood. I've seen a lot of very, well, young girls, 15, 16, 17, 18, that's where their love addiction may have begun, on a simple crush at university, college or school. And my point is that they will readily give their bodies, they will readily make love to this boy because they feel this crush. But sadly, they can be very, very let down because the boys will be boys, sorry, as we know, but you know, all the boy might feel the same way, but if that boy leaves and then she's just left, then at a very tender age, that young girl of 16, 17 or 18 can be completely heartbroken and not a good place to begin one's relationships and have a lifetime of distrust after that, or a lifetime of defensiveness or vulnerability because you fear the ultimate is going to happen all over again. I've nearly finished this part. It's longer than I thought. The relationship becomes, and I think I've touched on this already, it becomes the center of your universe, the center of your happiness, the main one, the only one, your raison d'etre, the meaning of life, the purpose of life, that one person. And the problem is, and I'll be talking about this briefly a little bit later, is that we cannot make one person the center of our universe. And that is why relationships often fail. Because the sad thing is, the moment that we're too needy and too longing and too hungry and too ravenous for this love to be reciprocated, the more pressured and the more corn. I suppose to reiterate that, when we make someone the center of our universe, it can have absolutely the most engulfing effect or pressure, demand and responsibility for the other person, because it's as if the, you know, one's neediness or one's longing and one's wanting just becomes all enveloping. So that is a real problem for the person that suffers from love addiction. Just to say that one of the other things is that you equate love and relationships with self-esteem or self-worth. In other words, and you will hear this, that if somebody's alone or if somebody isn't in a relationship, they actually feel as if they're excluded from the rest of their peer group. They feel a sense that they don't belong. They feel a sense that they're unlovable. They have a sense that without a man or a woman, I'm nothing. I don't exist without a partner. So in my recovery programs, what I actually really do is try to take it back to the self so that we, as I've mentioned before, we begin to build up someone's sense of self-esteem and self-validation so that they actually feel that they can exist as a universe unto themselves, that they at least can survive. And strangely or ironically, there's more possibility to find true love and connection when you have a connection with yourself. Although at this stage of this recovery program, that's probably very hard to imagine for you. So just to end this, it's you have an inability to focus on or think about anything else. As I've said here, this inability to imagine yourself with, it's almost like it's all consuming and that's all that your focus is. I mean, I've known some people give up work, they're not able to get up in the morning, or they self-medicate by using alcohol or drugs or drink or whatever to compensate for this deep loss that they find themselves in. Finally, love addiction, as I've said before, can happen to anyone from any walk of life. And once again, rejection lies at the core of love addiction. When somebody is experiencing love addiction, which is almost for certain, they are going to be rejected by the other person, whether they're unbeknown to them or not. But when somebody is locked in that love addiction, love avoidant pattern or cycle, it's a very, very painful place to be. And rejection almost certainly lies at the core of love addiction. So what I want to say now is that this is the end of step 3. And I hope that you've gained something from it. Once again, I always reiterate this at the end of each step. I'm giving you a depth understanding so that you have the knowledge to assimilate into you. And I believe knowledge is power, and power can lead to self-empowerment. All right. I look forward to seeing you again or speaking to you again in step 4. Thank you. Bye-bye.